So I just wanted to make a brief announcement. So the public comment, as she said, the public comment clipboard is making its way around the room now. So we will get a couple of procedural matters out of the way and invite all those who would like to testify to do so. First, call the meeting to order. And this is the North Gateway Redevelopment Advisory Board. Today is October 4th, 2018. The time is 8:01 a.m. And request the recorder to call the roll, please.
Jason Knox.
Here.
Mike Alley.
Here.
Barb Hakewish.
Here.
Brittany Davidson.
Here.
Nate Levin.
Here.
Jared Martin.
Here.
Peter Mayer Al is excused. Dwan Mueller.
Here.
Mike White.
Here.
Mark Adams.
Here.
Dania Ballard.
Here.
Thank you very much. And motion to approve today's agenda.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second. All right. So we have a motion and a second. Do we need to put on the tape who those are?
Yes.
Okay. Motion by Dwan Mueller, second by, I believe, Barb.
Yep.
To Barb Hakewish to approve the agenda for today. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you much. Same for motion to approve the minutes. I'll make that motion.
Second.
So we have a motion by myself, Jason Cox, second by Jared Martin to approve those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And so I know we still have the clipboard going around, but it does appear that we have some folks here for public comment. And so just to be clear, this is actually for folks wishing to address the board on any matters other than those which appear on the agenda. So I would, so for example, if you're here for CTAC, probably bring you folks up when we get to that agenda item, if that's okay. So I'll announce what's on the agenda today. So we have the all informational items. One is the Welcome to Salem sign project. The second is a ethics training on public meetings, public records, and item three is CTAC. And actually, with the group's approval, I'd like to switch the order a little bit from, so we can move CTAC up a little bit. So I know folks have got a busy, you know, we are during working hours after all, so move that up to 5B and move the public meetings records to 5C. And I would make a motion to that effect.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to
is that okay with you, your schedule? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, make a tweak in the agenda. All those in favor, thank you very much. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much. So do we have any folks here for public comment on any of the, what, other than those items? All right.
Well, this first point.
Could you state your name?
Oh, Pete Dane, and I'm here to comment on the Enjoy Salem sign.
Okay. Sorry. Can, are the mics going to be able to pick him up?
And you should probably come out soon.
I've got copies of an article that was in the Statesman Journal a while back. Meeting. Oh, by the way, my name is Pete Dane. I live in the area, and I'm kind of an unofficial rep for Lori Davis, who owns Baxter Auto Parts and properties behind there. And a couple of years ago, we did a restoration of the Enjoy Salem sign, and she was the one initially put up the sign, and she was past president of NGRAB, I'm sure you've all seen it up there, Hyacinth and I-5, and it's a nice welcome sign for people getting off I-5 and going into Salem. It's a bit old-fashioned and maybe shaped of Lake Oswego, but it gives the city a good impression for people entering it. Anyway, the City Parks Department did a marvelous job on doing some restoration on it, and they said that they didn't have enough money in their budget to restore the sign, although, because they wanted to focus on the welcome sign for people entering from Kaiser. Anyway, I encourage the board to prompt the City Parks Department to keep up the maintenance and maybe do some restoration work on the sign. Even the clear coat on it would make it look newer and brighter. Anyway, there's information on this article previously in the Statesman Journal, but anyway, it's the North Salem, the Enjoy Salem sign creates a good image for people coming in to the business district along North Portland Road. Are there any questions?
Can you give me an idea where it's at? Because I can't remember.
Oh, it's on Hyacinth and where Hyacinth and North Portland Road.
From the northwest corner.
Okay.
Right up Jackman Hill.
Oh, okay.
I know at one time the North Gate Neighborhood Association used to take care of that area and that sign. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to approach them again to maybe start doing that again?
Well, certainly, but the people in charge are the City Parks Department, so, and they have the permits for the property. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I'm sure if you contact them, they'd be glad to get some help on it.
I can add to that. So I was, up until this March, chair of the Neighborhood Association, and since then they've had trouble establishing stable leadership, I think is the best way to put it. So they're sort of in a state of flux at the moment. If anyone living in the area is interested, I highly recommend you get involved with that group, and it's a good thing to get going.
Okay, and that's the name of the Neighborhood Association?
Northgate.
Northgate,
yeah.
Okay. I belong to the Northeast Neighborhood Association, but I'll keep that in mind.
And I think what Mark Bechtel from the city is going to present about is a new sign, so it might tie to what you're talking about.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks. Other folks here on the sign issue, or any other issue for that matter that isn't on the agenda? Okay, moving on to 5A, Welcome to Salem Sign Project, and Mark Bechtel.
Can I say that?
I don't know if you can see this one. This is a very low-tech, old-fashioned way of
presenting.
All I'm missing is the hand puppets. Good morning. I'm Mark Bechtel. I'm the Public Works Operations Manager. Part of what I'm responsible for is day-to-day operations of parks, streets, water, sewer, and stormwater. I had hoped to come to you earlier this year, but this summer we had a little bit of a water issue that we were dealing with, so it kind of slowed us down. But wanted to get back out here and meet with you and talk about the future of the Welcome or Enjoy Salem sign here at the northeast corner of Hyacinth and Portland Road. It's been around quite a while, and I think the gentleman talked about it. It's one of the older entranceway signs to the city, and we actually have some money to address that sign. The transient occupancy tax fund has, some of it's been allocated for entranceway treatments and improvements for the city. We call it the TOT board, but they have a very long name, Cultural and Tourism Promotion Board. They have allocated about $75,000 a year for improving entranceways. And again, that gentleman was correct. The first chunk of money we had, we used to rebuild the Salem Kaiser Together traffic circle kind of monument sign out there between Kaiser and Salem. It had been struck by a drunk driver and largely demolished, and so that's been completely rebuilt. The next thing we wanted to do is go to another existing sign, which is the Portland Road sign, and see what we could do to improve that as an entranceway treatment to the city. It's been around quite a while. It is done kind of the 1970s style of entryways. If you get close to it, it's a magnificently done wooden carved sign. A lot of love and effort went into making that sign many years ago. It was maintained by volunteers for a while. Then it kind of fell into disrepair. And then Parks has been doing at least some landscaping, very, very basic landscaping treatments around it. But the sign is showing some distress. When you go by it, the part of the Joyce Salem area is starting to flake off, and the paint is getting dull, and there's some damage to the sign. And so really, even though you have it as an information item, I'm here to kind of take some direction or guidance from you as to whether we should invest in restoring the sign, putting it through some restoration process, or to replace it with a more modern entranceway treatment to the city. I have been to the Northgate Neighborhood Association and spoke with them. I've been to the Lansing Neighborhood Association and spoke with them. And both groups were entirely split down the middle between whether to restore or to replace, which leaves you as kind of the tie-breaking group, unless I get invited to some other neighborhood association.
I have a question then.
Yes.
As far as restoration versus buying a new sign, what is the timeline? If you got an answer this month, what's the timeline for it to actually be completed, and how much would it cost in both directions?
A lot of it depends on what we end up wanting to do. If it's just a restoration, we might contract here with Center 50 Plus, their wood shop. They do expert renovations here of wooden things. They completely restored all the carved wooden doors at City Hall. And so they could easily take this on and do a restoration of this sign. I don't know what the cost would be. It'd probably be fairly minimal. We could then turn around and put a better landscape treatment around it, repair the lights, so it'd be lit better, you know, more colorful flowers and landscaping, make sure the irrigation system's working fine. So it would be brought up to a higher standard of landscaping and look. Replacement depends on just how nice of a replacement entryway you want to go. I have about $100,000 available because we had some carryover from the previous year. So we have, you don't really want to spend more than that on entranceway, but we do have enough money that we would do a design and contract construction of that entryway. A lot of cities have, you know, fairly modern entranceways. If you want to go online, Google, you know, entranceways to cities, and there's hundreds of pictures of potential entranceway treatments. If you've been to Kaiser Station, their entranceway is very attractive. Welcome to Kaiser. You can see other cities do very nice kind of landscaping treatments. I know that you've been investing quite a bit of money along the Portland Road corridor, and you're looking at other ways to improve the infrastructure here in the district. And so taking maybe a larger view, you know, what kind of entranceway treatment would you like to have into the Portland Road, you know, area? So we can go either way. I know there is quite a bit of nostalgic sentiment for the existing sign, and I don't treat that lightly. There was a lot of effort that went into that sign. There's still people around who were connected with that original sign, and you know, it's not my job to hurt people's feelings or feel like we took away something that was beloved or really, you know, cared about. On the other hand, it's been here a long, you know, the existing sign has been here a long time, and maybe you want to look at something new or different. So really, I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but any guidance you could give me would be very helpful. Go through that work with you.
Okay, yeah, Dwan. No, I'll get you, Mark.
I think you have his hand
in
the first.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm in the sign business, so I know $100,000 will build you some exquisite signs. not quite Las Vegas, but, you know, you're gonna do more than...
And we don't have to spend $100,000.
Thank you.
This way, I want to start after that, so...
You're talking about irrigation and...
Yeah, I understand the whole, yeah, you know, six Olympic swimming pools. The question is that location the best location? The Parkway seems to be the main feed right into town right now. I understand that Portland Road, with all the renovation going on, it's gonna really improve, and people are gonna come in there. My question is it, one option would be to renovate the existing sign, because I think it is a neat sign, and then maybe place something else somewhere else if there's property available. Is that an option?
Well, we're actually under direction from the city council and the Cultural and Tourism Promotion Board to create some kind of entranceway treatment at all the major entranceways to the city.
Okay.
A complicating factor is that a lot of those entranceways are ODOT highways, and we don't own the right-of-way, and ODOT is incredibly bureaucratic about things like entranceway signs. So what we're trying to do is hit the low-hanging fruit first, rights-of-way that are city-owned, and entranceway. This is an existing entranceway, but Salem Parkway is, you know, right, that's a big entranceway. One of my next jobs would be to see if we could work something out with ODOT along Parkway or Mission Street or Commercial Street, or improving the one on Wallace Road.
I like your idea of working with the 50 Plus Center or any other organizations. I know the State Penitentiary has a sign shop. There's other organizations out there. And anytime we can get buy-in from additional community groups on a project that enhances the area, I think is a win-win all the way around financially. But then it means something to people, so that things don't get to a point of ill repair, because those people care, and they're going to give you a phone call, let you know that.
Thank you. Juan?
Yeah, my comment would be that, to go the way of, you know, it'd be a lot cheaper to have like 50 Plus Center do the sign and leave a lot more money for other improvements in the area, like irrigation or lighting or whatever, and maybe even some left over to do another sign somewhere else. But that location is great, because for the county fair, for the state fair, all Portland Road gets crowded with traffic. Everybody comes up the interstate, comes right by there. So
it's a major entranceway.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially during those times of year.
And I'll add that it's also, and I want to get to the side of the table, but I do want to add that this is also, you know, if you're a lobbyist, if you're coming to the Capitol, this is the road you take too. So, you know, I think it's an impression creator for a very large and sometimes very influential group of people. So who had their hands up first over here? Okay.
My biggest question would be, don't care either way on the noose, on the sign, what would the maintenance cost be to maintain either the old one or to maintain a new one, which would give us more bang for our buck on the further down the road?
You know, we're going to be using the TOT funding for maintenance, so we're maintaining the Salem Kaiser Together entranceway at a much higher level of care than we do the rest of the rights of way. So it would be the same here. We either would have city forces do it, or we'd contract out with a landscape contractor to give it more constant attention.
Yeah.
It's kind of on the same lines, and it would be a matter of long-term, what the funding stream would be, and choices regarding softscape versus hardscape landscaping type stuff from a maintenance standpoint, regardless of what the actual sign is, the area around the sign and how that area is being maintained.
Yeah, it'd be our intent to raise the level of maintenance commensurate with whatever we end up putting in there. So,
yeah.
Mark, I think the question that Barb was alluding to was the issue of the sign maintenance, not the area.
Okay.
The question that I would ask is this existing sign something that's going to have the long-term durability as compared to a more modern sign?
Boy, you know, I'm not a master carpenter, I don't know. I think we'd want to look at, you know, restoring it the way it was originally done, some kind of coating on it, sealant or coating, to make it graffiti resistant or, you know. But it's still a wooden sign. I mean, it's still subject to the, you know, what weather will do to it. Some of these more modern signs are not immune to graffiti and damage as well. Any of the more rock monument or porous material monuments sometimes are difficult to get graffiti off of. So, and graffiti tends to be our biggest maintenance issue, or drunk drivers in Kaiser. So, you know, but I'm just not a, I would defer to the man who's the sign guy. I really don't know which one is more maintenance intensive.
Well, obviously concrete's going to last longer than wood. There are coatings that you can put, clear coats over concrete, things that are, nothing's graffiti proof, you're right, but it's easier to clean off, I guess. But that can be done on the wood also. Mm-hmm. The old sign is kind of nostalgic. I like the looks of it. I like the fact that it was donated by someone in the community. But I think the landscaping around it is going to be the key to me. And if that can be, boy, if there was some local business that wanted to hang their own sign up there that said this place is maintained by Acme Lawn Care, then by all means, I would welcome something like that. And that may be something to consider.
Other thoughts? Yeah, Nate.
If it's okay, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay.
I would move that the board approve restoring the existing sign conditioned on the issue of landscape maintenance of the area by the city.
Before you vote, I can bring you back a landscape design at a future meeting.
Well, that's another question. Is this something we want to make a recommendation on today?
That if the city is comfortable saying yes, we are prepared to do the landscape maintenance, then I would just simply remove the condition and say that I would make a motion that the board recommend to the city that they restore the sign sooner than later.
Okay, and I believe Jared seconded that. So we do have a motion in, on the table. Any other thoughts? So maybe you guys can help me wordsmith this a little bit. So my primary concern is graffiti susceptibility. You know, in your profession, and I'm kind of looking to the sign expert and the public works folks as well, you know, is there a treatment you could do for, because I could definitely, you know, there's definitely community sentiment around that sign. I'd ask first, you know, do you think this could be restored to, I wasn't here in the 70s, I don't know what it looked like, could it be restored to have some of its original splendor, I guess? And second, do you think there's an effective coating or something that could be put on it to make it graffiti easier to remove?
The answer is I believe yes. The sign really is as it originally was. It's, you know, some of the wooden areas have been splintered or cracked or broken. They would need to be repaired. The carving needs to be restored, and then just repainted.
Mm-hmm.
There's coatings out there that we put on all sorts of stuff to make things graffiti resistant.
Okay, and is that something I would need to add to a motion, or I presume this is something you would probably pursue in any case?
What we're looking at is whether to restore or replace.
Okay.
We can take that direction and run with it, and we're going to do the best job we can to restore.
Absolutely.
The sign and then add a landscaping treatment around it.
Okay. And to be clear, the $100,000 you're speaking of, is that TOT or is that urban renewal?
That's TOT. Okay. This is outside of your urban renewal district. So.
Well, there you have it. Okay. That's my questions. Any other thoughts? Okay. So there's a motion on the floor to recommend restoration of the existing sign. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And it's neat to see that investment. So, fantastic stuff. So, with our amended agenda, 5B, CTEC Phase 5 funding update, I do believe we have at least one per, several.
Chuck and I are both.
Okay. Superb. Come on up, and please introduce yourselves for the listening audience, and
good morning. Welcome. Again, as I look around the table, I see two people I owe emails to. So.
Yes, you do.
Also, as a Kaiser resident, and I was on the Kaiser City Council for 7 years before I got elected to represent Kaiser on the school board, I could tell you all sorts of stories about the drunk drivers in Kaiser and that sign. Dick Withnell invested a lot of money in that originally, and so he would be a steady person coming to Kaiser City Council meetings to say, can you help repair it? We had one counselor who did not want to repair it, just to leave it the way it was as a reminder to the community about the evils of drunk driving. So,
no, I can definitely.
I came here again this morning to talk about CTEC. And first of all, to and Kim's with me too, to give you all an update on where we are financially as we try to wrap up a $17 million project. We have been blessed with the urban renewal dollars that you have recommended to the Urban Renewal Board for us to get. We've been able to leverage that $2 million with another $13.9 million to get us up to, well, Kim will give us the exact figures, but about $15 million. So it's been huge for us, the support of this group, and we can't thank you enough. You're touching the lives of some very special kids, and I think it's just a great use of urban renewal dollars, what you've done, because of all of the advantages. We are up to 8 programs. I'm not going to list them for you. Many of you have been out there, and if you haven't been out there, I would encourage you to give me a call or Kim a call, and we'd love to give you a tour. But probably in the back of information, you've got a lot of this. But we finished phase 4, and that we had a ribbon cutting for that. In September, and that was business leadership and public safety were the last two that we've added since many of you have been out there. Right now, we're trying to raise the money to complete phase 5, which will be agriculture and culinary arts. We've got about 600 kids, and I think one of the things that's been really exciting is that this has been a huge success story in our community, but also throughout the state and nation. Last week, I and the principal, Rhonda Rhodes, and Jim Orth, who's the director of career technical education for the Salem-Kaiser schools, we went to Louisville to the national convention and made a presentation on CTEC. And because of the public-private partnership, it's just been hugely looked at by different communities to see whether or not they can replicate it in their community. In June, just before the school year ended, the new superintendent of the Portland Public Schools, several of his board members and members of his cabinet came down to take a look at CTEC to find out about the public-private partnership. And of course, for us to be able to talk about how we found this building, it was in the Urban Renewal District, and what we've been able to help, hopefully, to contribute to the re-energizing that whole community is an important part of our story. We, like I said, we have visitors all of the time coming to take a look at this. Just a side note, Annie, is it the Oregon
Economic Development Association?
I'm going to Klamath Falls on Monday to accept the award that the city nominated us for. So we were recognized by CEDCOR as the outstanding public-private partnership in the area. As I said, we've got visitors coming from education, but business, chambers of commerce to look at CTEC. So it's been very exciting from that standpoint. But when we talk about CTEC, it's more than just the public-private partnership. That's really important because it's so unique. There's not another one like it in the country. But the second thing that's unique about it is the integrated curriculum. Kids are there 2.5 days a week. They take their social, they take their maybe science class and English class related to the major area of study that they're involved in. So for example, in construction, they're taking construction-related math, they're taking construction-related English. We never hear kids say, I don't know why I'm taking this class, because they know, because what they're doing in those classes directly relates to building the house or what's happening in construction. The third aspect, public-private partnership. The second aspect is the integrated curriculum. The third aspect is professional skills. All the time I'm running into employers who say, I could hire people right now, I just can't find them. Can't find people who will show up on time, work an honest 8-hour day, not steal from me, and be drug-free. And so that's what we, the third component of CTEC, is we work very, very hard with these kids on that. I have people who tell me, if I can have people like that, I can train them to do anything. So for us, those professional skills are just as important as anything else. As a result, 98% of the kids in CTEC graduate from high school. That compares to 73% in the Salem-Keizer School District, and that's close to the same average, 73-74% statewide. So it's important for us to have those kids graduate, and like I said, 98% of them do. But equally important is the placement of them into an apprenticeship, community college, four-year college. It's the pathway that's so important for us, so that when they graduate, you know, the diploma is a good thing to have, but they need to have a plan, they need to have a pathway to continue their education. One of the things that's also unique is that Mountain West has invested a considerable amount of money to follow these kids when they graduate. We, because it's a public-private partnership, we want to be able to come back to you as a major investor in this and say, this has been the return on investment. We've got a company that's going to track the kids 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, and 10 years down the road, so that we can really see, is this working? If it's working, great. If it's not, what do we need to do to the program to make it more effective? Because we want these kids to be able to go out and get high demand, high wage jobs. And so that's unique in public education. Usually when the kids graduate, it's goodbye and they're busy with the next group coming through. I'm not slamming the school district at all. I'm on the Salem-Keizer School Board, which means I've had to abstain from a lot of votes on this whole issue. But to me, that's a very unique thing. I can talk about a million success stories, and I'm not going to bore you with those because I know we just have a limited amount of time. But I'm always impressed with this one young lady who wanted to go into construction, she thought, and she really thought this was her career path. And so she kind of learned something in February in the rain out pounding nails, and suddenly it wasn't quite so appealing. But she stuck with it, and this group called Women in Construction out of Portland got a hold of her and when she graduated. And they said, if you will go through this 8-month program, we'll pay your tuition. And she agreed to do it. And after 8 months of free education that she got because of the connection with CTEC, she is now a licensed Oregon State building inspector, making $40,000 a year with PERS and medical and dental benefits. And she's 19 years old, you know. So those are, that's just one of many success stories I could be sharing with you. If I were sitting in your place, and I think that it's great that you're all volunteers and here on your own time, but I think that what we've been able to do with the urban renewal money that we've been able to get is renovate a building that had sat empty for about 7 or 8 years. Nielsen Manufacturing was a family-owned business for two generations. They closed in 2008, laid off 400 or 500 workers, and as a result, that building sat empty until we bought it for $3.5 million. And when I say we, I mean Mountain West. And so what we do as Mountain West is we provide the facility, we renovate the facility, and we provide the CTE equipment, and then we lease it to the school district for $1 a year, and they pay the operational expenses. So that $17.9 million that we're trying to raise goes towards the purchase of the facility, goes towards renovating it, goes towards purchasing it, and as a result, the return on investment, I think, is huge. You're developing a workforce. This has created 60 new jobs in this area. It's renovated a dilapidated old building. The other thing is phase six, which will be coming down the road, will be a professional development center. And right now, the school district is leasing spaces all over Salem and Kaiser for professional development. And we'll have about 8,000 square feet set aside for them to do professional development. And that will bring 50,000 people into the urban renewal district every year. They'll be buying gas, looking for restaurants, everything else. So, you know, again, that's another good example. So, you know, I think the investment really addresses the workforce development, job creation, blight reduction, and economic stability. So I commend you for your vision on that. Kim, would you like to kind of give us a little more of an update on where we are? This is Kim Hansen.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I serve as the development director at CTEC, and Chuck and I have worked really closely together to raise the $17 million. And I just wanted to mention that I recently heard that the new high school up in Beaverton cost $185 million. So initially, we were it was a little daunting to raise $17 million in Salem for this kind of project, but by comparison, we basically have built a new high school. We're serving 1,000 students once it's fully built out every year. And so we're not only helping with a little bit with the overcrowding in our high schools, but we're serving that many kids with this amount of money. So I just wanted Sarah.
It makes sense to build these things with private industry and things instead of public money.
And to renovate a building. So that's the huge part. I wanted to just hand out a fundraising update that you guys can pass around. Sarah and I, of course, I mean, this $2 million that the Urban Renewal Agency gave is really unprecedented. There's never been a grant, and it was actually $1 million, and then another $1 million was added. Was really huge and has really, really helped us get closer to achieving our goal. But as Sarah and I talked this summer about us coming back again, you know, she said, well, it's really important that we understand all the fundraising efforts that have been going on. We didn't really come back lightly, but because we already knew what a huge gift it was. But yeah, as Chuck said, we've raised, of the $17 million, we've raised about $15.7 million. So we're getting closer and closer to the goal. I made a mistake on here. Under the public sector, I have Mountain West, but Mountain West has given almost $9 million to the project. And then you'll see the totals here that we've raised $4 million from the public sector. That includes the city of Salem, $2 million. We've raised about $1.2 million from foundation and grants. We've raised about $850,000 from other industry giving, and about $600,000 from individual donors. So Chuck and I have been pretty busy the last year and a half in particular, really hosting a lot of fundraising lunches, touring folks, having larger groups come out to CTEC to learn about the project, and trying to really leverage the gift from the city and from the state. And what we came up against this summer was that we were about $1.6 million short as we went into phase five. And so Mountain West and our team really reflected on where we were at. And there was a moment that we thought we would delay the ag program, which our last two programs, Culinary Arts Management and Ag, are planned to open in September 2019. So we were feeling a little bit like, I don't know if we can go for two programs in 2019 unless we can find another larger pot of funding. So Sarah and I talked at that point, who couldn't be here today, but Annie's here, of course. So Sarah and I talked about how best to reapproach the city for some additional support. And we knew that the grant program for this urban renewal area was tight, and there's a lot of businesses that need support. And we felt like we already taken an enormous grant. So Sarah and Kristen and others in urban development, Annie included, were able to look at some other pots of funding, and were able to realize that there were some project cost savings available, about $400,000. And so we are asking for the city to move that project cost savings to CTEC. So actually, it wouldn't touch the grant program. It's just money that is available for a project like this, kind of anywhere throughout the city. So they were very creative. We are so appreciative of that support. And we're really here today, I think, just to share an update. Thank you for your past support, and to ask for your support to the city and the Urban Renewal Agency Board in moving that request forward, which I think would happen a little later this fall. So I'm happy to answer any questions about our request or just the project.
Go for it.
So just for clarification purposes, the support that you're asking for the North Gateway Urban Development Advisory Board is for us to endorse the city's transfer of available funds, not pulling additional urban renewal fund, grant funds.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
I want to get to our board members first, but I want to ask you, Annie, a question. So can you explain where the project cost savings came from?
So in this year's budget, there was $1.2 million allocated for the Fisher Road project. That was Salem Housing Authority's housing development. They're purchasing a property on Fisher Road and renovating that to create, I believe it's 35 units of homeless housing, or hardest to house housing. We've learned after that funding was allocated, and that aligns with our citywide goal to address affordable housing, the need for affordable housing, and address homeless needs. After that budget was approved, we learned that there was some city home money, so we received we're an entitlement city. We receive funding from the federal government to assist with addressing affordable housing and low-income needs within our community. So we learned there was some savings there and some funding in our federal funding that needed to be allocated. That funding was in jeopardy of losing that funding if we didn't then allocate. So what we're doing is taking 400 of that original 1.2 in urban renewal and using home to fill that gap. Therefore, that 400 comes back to the Urban Renewal Agency. So we're using a different source for part of that. That project is about a year behind, my understanding. It's still moving forward, but does that help?
Yes, okay. Very much. Yeah.
I have a question, and first of all, thank you very much for listing out all of your sources of money. A question I have, and I'm new to the board, so thank you for the leeway here. Mountain West is a private corporation, yes?
Yes.
Okay. I don't see any federal resources on here. Have you attempted to go to the feds to support what you're doing?
We've had conversations. We've had both senators and several representatives out. There wasn't like a really logical pot of money to go for. There wasn't a grant program that was a perfect fit for CTEC.
There's not a federal education?
There wasn't anything for career technical education where it was like a grant program we could apply for. And so we have not sought federal support. There wasn't a pot to go to, basically. We did research it.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had both Senators Merkley and White and Kurt Schrader visit. Take a look at it, because it's become quite the magnet for a lot of people to come and take a look at it. We were able to get money from the state of Oregon and the capital construction budget and things. So.
And regional solutions out of the governor's office. But yeah, I was surprised actually in doing the research. I spoke with the National Career Technical Education Organization as well, and there just weren't a lot of sources on the national level, like either foundations or the federal government, where they were seeking requests for this type of career technical education project. So I wish there was a bigger pot of money. You know, in Oregon, we've had Measure 98, which has funded career technical education and been a huge support to CTEC because the district on their side on operations is funding a large part of the staff and industry teachers from Measure 98 funding. So that's been key to our success.
Yeah, Jerry.
I just got a quick, so phase five is the agricultural and phase six. You mentioned phase six, right?
Well, phase six is a public, the professional development center.
Okay, so are we trying to fund that or the ag?
We're trying to fund the phase five, which is ag and culinary arts.
Okay, and then how close does it get?
We're about, if you mean if we get this support, $400,000, then we have about $900,000 to raise. So we feel like that is pretty doable given we have about $150,000 right now in pending grants, and we have a major donor considering a gift of $250,000. So we feel like we're pretty close at that point. It would put us under the $1 million mark to finish phase five.
And plus, I was going to pass the hat around this.
Yeah, that's what we usually say.
Good luck there.
So I have Brittany and then Mark, or I'm sorry, Mike.
Will CTEC be receiving any funds from the school bond that passed?
No. No. Because of the public-private partnership, we've assumed the responsibility of raising the money for that. The bond was totally separate to increase capacity at all of the high schools, to do a lot of CTE creation in other high schools in the district, but we're separate from that.
And the challenge with that was the district doesn't own the building yet. We wanted to own it through the build-out. So because they don't own it, it couldn't be included in the bond. We would have had to transfer it in like earlier than we wanted to.
So you mentioned phase six would bring people to the area. Is it going to be located on site?
Yes.
At this facility as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm assuming that's additional jobs will be created there as well, or?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by additional jobs.
To host the teacher training.
Yeah. Right, staffing, so forth.
Yeah, or that'll all be handled by the school district.
Okay.
Yeah, we won't be raising money for that phase.
Okay.
Okay, that'll be the school district utilizing that space. And instead of leasing spaces throughout the city, they won't need to do that.
It'll be centralized at this location.
Could gotcha. Be a savings to the district.
Could be a savings, you know, and that's what they're looking at, a savings. And then plus, I'm looking at, you know, culinary arts providing lunches and things for that. I was looking at our construction class doing the sign out on Portland Road. You know, there's just an awful lot of opportunities that are out there.
So. I think it'll bring more people to the area, like you say, too.
50,000
supports that local businesses too.
Yeah. 50,000 is the number the district's given us, is the number of people they have to train every year. So, and it's just not for CTE, it's for a variety of professional development throughout the district.
Could you state your name for the record?
Rick Adams again. I just want clarity. The $400,000 seems to have come out of nowhere, because I'm mindful you say we don't want to take this from other projects. Where would those dollars have flowed had there not been this request, which I'm assuming was
not true? And I was just looking at my notes, clarification that federal funding is community development block grant funding. So we have two pots of federal funds that we receive. One is for home housing, and the other is community development block grant, which can be used for infrastructure and other related. So that funding is CDBG. And so if this opportunity didn't come forward, that money would have just gone into our unallocated fund. So currently in this year's budget, you have about $3 million that is unallocated or unspecified.
So it would have just,
gone into that pot.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Quick question.
Go on.
Yeah, what do you have in plan to raise the other 900,000?
Yeah, the bottom, I tried to sort of capture some of our strategies. I mean, we're still doing a lot of grant writing. We've also been hosting fundraising lunches. So if any of you wanted to come or invite folks to come out. We've been doing Tuesday lunches, touring different groups of people and having different people host a lunch. We are mostly at this point, as we try to close that amount by the end of the year, meeting with major donors, because it's kind of a better use of time going out. We'd like to get more industry support, but generally, industry hasn't been able to give us the larger gifts. And so I think in the future, they'll do more sponsorships and things like that. But right now, mostly those, like grants, major donors, fundraising lunches.
So is the, say I own a construction company and I start hiring C-Tech and see that they're good, then I'm more likely to want to donate to C-Tech?
Yes, definitely.
Nate?
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
That the board endorse the transfer of the dollars to the C-Tech project.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, so we have a motion by Nate Levin, second by Mark Adams to...
I apologize. Still new to all this. I don't agree with the transfer. I don't agree with this particular effort, and I would like some more discussion as to other sources of the money. Practically, I understand Mountain West is a private corporation, and I see that $9 million has been contributed privately, and in looking at all of the other resources, it's very weighted. In terms of a lot of grant funding and such. And so in asking the city for more money, which seems like there's $2 million that's already come from urban renewal and other that's coming from Salem in general, I have questions about why Salem in particular would put more money into this effort without further discussion about other opportunities.
Procedurally, so motion and a second on the floor, that definitely opened, you know, that is, the motion can be discussed. We're certainly not going to plow straight to a vote if folks want to discuss further. Was that a question? Or
well, just when I heard endorsement, I heard that we are all in agreement to make this happen.
Okay.
And I want to emphasize that I'm not in agreement yet.
Okay. Okay, so we have a motion, and that's precisely what the discussion's all about. So appreciate you.
We can discuss that now, then. That's a
exactly
issue.
Precisely.
So your
precisely.
Question.
Hold on. So we had Jared first, and then Rick will get to you, or Mark.
Oh
sorry.
No, go ahead.
I'm getting confused by my Adams brothers over here.
So your question is, if C-Tech were not to receive those funds, what other programs could utilize those funds?
No.
So they're trying to sort out a side issue here, but
okay. My understanding of her concern was the money that's allocated to C-Tech for this project is coming. We've already put in $2 million.
Urban Renewal alone has, and City of Salem or Salem area has contributed a large portion as well. Looking at all the other resources and the amount that still needs to be raised versus their own private investment, I don't know why City of Salem or us or Salem area in general, why we should be that source for the additional funding when there's
a lot of capital out there.
Yes.
If I could just maybe respond.
Jump in and then I got to get to Jared.
Yeah.
Oh no. I didn't.
Oh okay.
When we were looking at this over the summer and realizing all of the places, and you can see the number of places we've gone to for funding, you can't really go back to a lot of those places again and ask them for another contribution. And frankly, we've really done our best, I think, to exhaust all sorts of opportunities from foundations and corporations and individuals to do that. We're down to needing the last $1.5 million. And there's not a lot of places that we can go for donations that size, and we want to complete the project. We want to get it done so that in 2019 it can open. And so we looked at, do we delay the project for a year, delay phase five for a year, and keep plugging away at raising money, knowing that we've gone to the state, we've gone to all of the foundations that we could think of that finance these things, and we're still going to have $900,000 to raise somehow to complete the project. So when we heard that there was the opportunity maybe for this $400,000, we decided to go ahead with the project, not knowing if we were going to get it, but decided to go ahead with that in hopes that we would get it, so that it would narrow the gap down to $900,000. And if people have suggestions on where we can go for that $900,000, we would welcome that advice in that direction. What we're saying is that what started off for us as a $2 million project with two programs at McKay has ballooned into what you now see as CTEC. Mm-hmm. And so it's been the private part of the community that stepped up, and we feel we've tapped almost everybody in that area that we can. So
there's also some cost efficiencies with construction, which is one of the things that we talked about with the city this summer, that if we pulled out and delayed ag for 1 year, it would cost us to bring everybody back in on site to build a year from now. I mean, costs go up, but it's all, we estimated it would cost several hundred thousand dollars more to delay the one program. And we also have the state funding. We had talked about phase five specifically, including ag and culinary arts management. So we were risking having to go back to the governor's office and say, we're going to delay ag. So when I re-approached Sarah Long about this, there's kind of a variety of reasons. She said, we have this cost savings, and if this would keep ag on track while you hustle to do the other fundraising, you know, let's look at that. So we very thoughtfully discussed this, trying to think about a strategy to keep ag on track, basically, and not have to delay the project.
So I want to get Annie in.
Just a quick clarification for new board members. In terms of the process here, this is right now an informational item on your agenda because we are not asking for any funding action. The next step would be, and because the funds have not yet been transferred, so we're still waiting for that all to go through. This is an anticipation of that. And so the next step, we can't move any money around in our budget without the Urban Renewal Agency Board taking an action, even if it's 400 and 400, right? Even if we're even if those funds are going to a different purpose, right? So we would still take this to the agency board, likely the second meeting in November, if the transaction has occurred, that money has come into our account. So that would be the next step. If you'd like, you're not being asked to take an action today, but if you'd like to, you can. And then we would include, and yeah, then just procedurally, then typically in that staff report to the agency, we would include any comments that the advisory board has. So we would say the advisory board decided to take an action and that vote was split, or, you know, something, that vote was not unanimous. That would be included in the report. Just for a quick, just for a clarification.
So with an eye on the clock, I'm curious if, and this isn't a vote, I just kind of want to get a sense. So what I'm hearing from Annie is that the city is not asking for direction and would not need direction from us prior to our meeting next month. I'm curious what this group would think, and nods or whatever on nod shakes, brickbats, what have you, of sort of maybe dedicating our November meeting to this topic, because I think it sounds like there's a lot of robust discussion that and some questions that folks might have. But we do have a motion on the floor, so yeah, well, that's kind of where we're at. So we kind of...
you can withdraw your motion. I can draw my second.
So we do have quite a few people who would like to talk. So nods, shakes, what are we thinking in terms of... Nate, are you, what do you got?
Two things. The first is to respond to Dania's question or concern. You are not alone in that. I previously had expressed concern about requests for additional dollars for CTEC because the urban development funds have a much broader focus than specifically CTEC, and I felt that percentage-wise, we were putting a lot of dollars in that direction. So in answer to your response, these guys aren't here, we're talking privately. In answer to your response, the 400,000 transfer shuffle, as long as it doesn't affect the rest of the funding authority, is the key consideration for me. If it was a request to take an additional 400,000 out of the reduced pot that we have, I would be voting against it because we have other projects and a much broader commitment to the community. I know, I believe, I understand the vitality and the importance of the CTEC project, but candidly, I think we've done enough. So if the 400,000 weren't available as a simple transfer and that doesn't touch us, then I'm okay with that, okay? However, I can give you a forward commitment and say that if CTEC were to come back in the future and ask for additional dollars, I would probably take the position that I was not endorsing it because the North Gateway Urban Development Area has a lot of other things to do, okay? And 2.4 million into this specific project, I think is enough. Okay, so this 400,000 transfer I'm okay with, but I'm absolutely not okay with keeping the door open for future requests.
Barb,
real quick, I just wanted to say part of it is a Nate, I'm okay with the 400,000 because it's a transfer of other dollars. It doesn't affect our funding schedule. CTEC has been a huge boon, not only to the city of Salem, but to the Northgate area. It has revitalized that area. It's caused a lot of new development to start out there. It's been positive all the way around. There is not a negative attached to that. And I think if we've got the extra money and we can move it without touching our grant proposals that go forward, that it's a win-win for everybody.
Duan?
Yeah, I deal with a lot of, in the past, I've dealt with a lot, gone to a lot of meetings where employers have come to us and said, hey, we desperately need people to do our jobs, to do the hands-on. They don't need college, they need the technical schools, they need technical training in the food industry, they need welders, factories. I think CTEC is meeting all these needs now in the community, and I think we should support CTEC all we can because of this. I see nothing but positive things coming out of CTEC.
Yeah, Mike.
Just, you had asked kind of a poll if we should dedicate the next meeting to CTEC. I would say, in my opinion, no. We've had a lot of discussion here, so.
Okay.
We can have the discussion, get the vote, and then.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not getting a sentiment that very many folks want to carry this over. Other comments, questions?
We always love to come back and talk more.
Yeah, I know. So I appreciate you bringing up the Measure 98 question because that was something I had a question about. So my question is about the Mountain West investment. So certainly huge number, and I think very clearly very grateful to Mountain West and to the Tokarskis for that investment. My question is, so my understanding is that at one point Mountain West was sort of fronting upfront construction costs and then would sort of get paid back on the back end with whatever. So does this number represent a permanent investment or are they going to get some of that back?
No, they've given that investment. They will not get any of that. Is their gift to the project. So uh-huh. Right now they're building, hoping to get paid back for the rest of phase five, which uh-huh. is the gap that we're focusing uh-huh. for. They actually don't want to put more money into the project
okay.
at this point because that was a huge investment for them, and they've got other philanthropic interests in the community, other projects that they want to put their resources towards.
Mm-hmm. But my point is, and I think you're sort of, you pretty much answered it, I just want to be sure. So that represents a permanent gift, that,
yes.
That number's not going to go down by 400,000 if we put this in. Okay. Other comments or questions? Okay, so we have a motion on the floor, and we need to vote on it. All those in favor of, could you restate the motion, please?
That we make a recommendation to the Urban Development Board to approve the transfer of the 400,000 savings from the Salem Housing Development Project to CTEC.
Okay. So that is the motion you're being asked to vote on. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. One opposed. So that...
Two opposed.
Two opposed, okay.
I'm abstaining, but I oppose also.
Okay. Can we... maybe we should we do a roll call vote? Is that necessary?
Well, I only have two, so if you're against, please raise your hand.
And if you voted for, please raise your hand. So do we have any abstentions on that? I don't think so. So that goes, that motion passes, how many to two? Seven? Something like that? Appreciate the robust discussion on this. I think it's a worthy topic of, it's good, this back and forth is really good. So thanks everyone for that.
And just an invitation to the new members who have not been to CTEC, please give me a call and we'll set up a chance for you to come.
Yeah, we would love to have you all visit, just to see it live. The students actually get the tours, and it's amazing to see them in action in the program. Thank you so much for your time.
Just a reminder, too, we're going to be talking, we're taking to the City Council later in November a staff report to initiate the plan amendment that would increase our maximum indebtedness. So just back to funding, you know, that we're contemplating possibly up to $50, $55 million in additional projects. So that is happening as well. We're moving forward with that.
Okay. So thanks for that. Moving on to the new 5C, formerly the 5B, and sorry to keep everyone late, and apologize to our friend from the City Legal Department. And this is on public meeting, public records, and ethics training. So
we tend to do this every couple years with our boards. So this is, you're kind of making the rounds, aren't you, Brian?
Yeah,
going
I,
to the different
advisory boards. For several of us. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Brian Luce, Assistant City Attorney, with Dan Ashton, the City Attorney, and other legal department employees. This last discussion is a perfect segue into this training. Public meetings, public records, and ethics training. Some of the different discussion points that occurred earlier, I'll try and incorporate into this presentation to make it a little more meaningful, and I will get you out on time for sure. Public meetings, well, what are they? Why do we have them? Well, the purpose of a public meeting is to allow the opportunity of the public to see how governance occurs, to provide their input, to see what the decision-making process, and ultimately have those decisions be made in the public eye. State law requires that this occur, and it occurs throughout all of the United States. Sunshine laws that allows the public in to see how things are made. It's to ensure that the public has an opportunity to see how they're governed, make sure that they've got notice of where the discussions are going to occur. You know, the agenda gets posted in places like that, and that it's open to the public, you know, whether it's telephonic or an in-person meeting. Who is subject to these public meetings? If two of y'all decide to go golfing or fishing, is that a public meeting? We'll investigate that. The answer to that's no, but you'll see. Public meeting laws apply to all meetings of a governing body of a public body. Well, what do those two terms mean? A public body, that would be the City of Salem. A governing body includes the City Council and you all. You govern the public body. You all provide advisory information that the council will take into consideration to make a final decision on that. and you have a packet on this if you want additional detail. What meetings are subject to these laws? Well, meeting is a convening of a governing body for which a quorum is present, and that's the, in this case, the majority of seated members, where they're going to make a decision or deliberate towards a decision. If we were just taking a site visit or, you know, looking at CTEC, that wouldn't necessarily be a public body, unless the intention was to meet and discuss and possibly vote on a decision, then it would be considered a public meeting. Public meetings, it's considered a public meeting even if you're just getting information. If the only purpose of this meeting today was to have me just listen and there was going to be no action taken, it's still considered a public meeting because it's the, you know, meeting of the quorum for the purpose of gathering information. What's not a public meeting? Less than a quorum. If four of you run into each other at the Moody's, it's not going to be a quorum, but please don't discuss public information. And there's, I'm going to give you a few tips to ensure that you don't get in a situation where you accidentally have a quorum. With the modern day technologies, phones, computers, you can turn something that isn't a quorum into a quorum with a click of a button. Skip executive sessions. Pitfalls. Well, there's been several different Oregon cases that have involved public meeting violations. Lane County commissioners, they, it was an interesting scenario where they used their computers to get themselves in trouble. We had one member wrapped up something, I think we should consider voting on, or I'm going to plan on voting on X, Y, and Z, and sends it to the next member. So it's one member forwards the email to another person. They add their information and forward it on to the next, and then on to the next. Each individual email is only tailored to one person, but when you look at it, it was forwarded to a quorum of the members. So it was called a serial violation. Well, namely, one of the individuals was an attorney who did public meetings training. And when they were sued, the judge that was reviewing this was, you know, visibly, you know, and he was upset at the fact that this individual should have known better and participated in this. The point we want to take apart from this particular case is that there was personal liability on behalf of those members. This, you know, the county didn't cough up the penalty monies. It came out of their personal pockets. So even though you're volunteers that are unpaid, please take this very, very seriously because there are personal ramifications to your service. Now, it's rare that that occurs, and if you have questions about whether something's going to happen, feel free to contact me or Annie, and she can forward that information on. It's rare, but just keep that in mind when you're doing your business that you don't accidentally create a quorum. Because the next case, as a result of the lawsuit by that member, you know, that was charged $10,000, they sued Lane County, and the next set of board members got themselves into trouble by hitting a reply all. So they had, hey, we need to discuss whether we need to settle this case, hit reply all, and it went to everybody, and then they were also violating the public meeting laws. The difference there is the judge found that it wasn't intentional, didn't put personal liability on the individual, you know, members, but they were still found in violation. So be very, very careful with the technology today. You know, you can get on a Skype and create a quorum. You can get on a, you know, a conference call and create a quorum. So keep that in mind when you're discussing things outside of this body. Electronic communications, and this is kind of my segue that I do. You know, 20 years ago, you stopped with a dime and made a phone call. Now you have more power than NASA had, you know, sending, you know, people to the moon. And these can get you in trouble, both with public meetings, but also public records. What is an Oregon public record? Is prepared, owned, used, or retained by a state agency or a political subdivision. Relates to an activity, transaction, or function of a state agency or political subdivision, and is necessary to satisfy the fiscal, legal, administrative, or historical policy of that body. Well, when you guys, you know, create an agenda, we create a public record. When you send an email to Annie saying, can we add this to the agenda, you've created a public record. But remember, you can create public records with your phones. When I email Annie and say, hey, am I up for the next meeting? I created a public record and I have a responsibility to maintain that under the public records laws.
So, you know, Andy's going to have a copy of that, but if you're emailing each other, remember you're creating public records, and just because you're a volunteer and you're unpaid does not mean that, that those items are excluded from the public records retention laws and your responsibility to maintain those. So phone calls, you know, if you can get it done with a phone call, that's a good thing, but retain your emails. And be very sensitive when you're sending, you know, electronic information regarding your business on this board, that they, those communications are subject to public records requests. And although that information may never, you know, your personal information on your phone may never make it out in the public, a lawyer, myself, a judge, defense counsel may see other information on your phone. So keep that, you know, keep that in mind when you're using your personal information for a lot of this stuff. Try and keep it as segregated as possible. We all use it, and it's not, you know, Twitter and Facebook and things along those lines. But keep that in mind when you're doing your public work, that it may be subject to someone else seeing it. Public official ethics, and there were several different scenarios that occurred here before regarding a business owner who, you know, involved signs that may ultimately, you know, may want to bid on this particular project should it move forward. But you've got to take a few considerations in mind now that you are a public official. And congratulations, if you didn't know it, you are all public officials. And public ethics laws apply to you now. You've got state ethics laws, but you also have city ethics laws, which are more restrictive than the state. Who do these ethics laws apply to? Public officials, yourself. But they also apply to your relatives and any businesses that you may have, because you can't take your business hat off and say, well, I applied for this particular project, put my hat on, I'm going to vote for that one. So you have to keep those things in mind. Even appointed officials, and that's what you all would be. What does a business mean? Well, it's a private business entity, corporations, partnerships, franchisees. You can be self-employed, but there's some exclusions, like if you are on a 501c3, that's a nonprofit, there's an exclusion there. You can be a member of a nonprofit and still, you know, you don't quite necessarily have that ethical conflict. Our ethics laws are contained in Salem Revised Code Chapter 12. It's based on state law, but as I said, it's more restrictive. And we'll go through a couple of the main points of that, but you can certainly read more about it in the presentation, or if you're truly, you know, interested in falling asleep, you can go over read the SRCs on that. State law includes actual conflicts of interest, where you would directly receive a pecuniary benefit or detriment. So if you're going to get money under state law, now that's going to be an actual conflict of interest. Here in Salem, any benefit. A quid pro quo doesn't have to be necessarily flowing of money. You could have some recognition, some things like that. So keep that in mind. We have far broader definitions here in Salem.
And you're potential talking about conflict of interest.
For right? actual for yeah. all our ethics. Yeah. We're more restrictive than the state. Potential conflict of interest. Hey, I'm not sure. Well, if you're going to receive, again, any benefit, state is just money. Here in Salem, it's any benefit. And how will that affect you? We'll get to that. Conflict of interest required actions for public officials. Well, if you have an actual conflict of interest, hey, I'm going to apply to build this mobile home, and I'm a mobile home building company, you've got to disclose that. You've got to step aside and not participate. But if you've got a potential conflict of interest and you're not really sure because it's not obvious and direct, you have to disclose it, and depending on it, you may be able to still participate. Hey, there's a, you know, I may have a potential conflict of interest. My, you know, third cousin's brother's uncle runs a mobile home company, but I, you know, building company, I just want to let you all know so that we're above board. And that's really the goal of some of these public meetings and conflict of interest questions, which lies into our next topic. It's appearance of impropriety. If it doesn't look good, it probably isn't something you want to engage in. If you do that disclosure, hey, I've got a distant relative that does that, then you're not going to have the appearance that something underhanded is going. If you're above board, disclose things, you're not going to end up in a situation where the public is looking at any action of this board or a board member and saying, hey, that looks underhanded. Each of you have a duty to be fair and impartial, fulfillment of your duties.
please don't contact city councilors for preferential treatment unless you want to run to be the, if you want to be the city manager, then you can. There's an exception for that. Please don't use city-owned property for private use, so, you know, we can't use this to host personal parties after hours. And then, you, as a public official, you cannot grant special privileges to certain members of the public that's not available for everybody. So you can't use your, well, I'm a member on this board, so we're only going to allow you to present this particular application, and we're going to preclude everybody else. That would be improper. Sometimes you guys are going to come in contact with confidential information, you know, taxpayer information, things along those lines. You have the responsibility not to disclose that information to the public. You've got your public official hat on, and it has to stay that way. Consequences for violation, as I mentioned earlier, when it came to the Lane County Commissioners, they had a personal financial, that's the only one I'm aware of, a personal financial fine against them. That was a civil penalty that may lead to particular other actions. If you had a business that was an improperly awarded a contract because of actual conflict of interest, you know, that could, you could have some consequences for that. Here in the city, you can be removed from office. And then the council can take action to rectify some of the issues that may have occurred. Our city charter, chapter 62, discusses it, and it, all of these ethics issues applies to both elected and unelected public officials. It requires that you disclose if you receive a gift, if you have a relationship, or, you know, campaign contributions. There's a few exceptions if there's necessity, and it applies to everybody. We have less of a problem. Here's the big kicker on the ethics. It's a personal responsibility. No one's going to tell you that's unethical. You have to make that determination yourself. No one else has the information but you on your businesses, on your relationships, and things along those lines. You guys have to make the call. But you're not totally alone in that. This, you know, city attorney's office can provide some information regarding ethics, but we can't tell you what to do. Even if I said that was ethical, and I wrote it down and gave you a nice, you know, opinion letter on it, it holds no weight. Reviewing courts have said that, you know, an opinion by a city attorney does not insulate you from an ethical violation. You can go to the state ethics board and say, hey, I've got this ethical situation. You can call them on the phone, and the information's in the slide, on the slides. Hi, I've got this ethical information. Do you think I've got a problem? And they render an opinion over the phone. That will not insulate you. If you ask for an informal opinion, and they write it down from the state ethics board, that looks good to us. Again, that will not insulate you. The only true protection you can get is to ask for an official advisory opinion of the ethics board. That will take 6 months to a year, I imagine. So the point is, there are places you can go to get information, but ultimately it's the decision, an individual decision on your ethical issues. We can provide advice on where to go look and how to gather additional information. You can contact myself or Dan Atchison, the city attorney. We also have a hearings officer who can render advisory opinions on, you know, the city's position on the ethical issue. But then again, remember, it's ultimately the decision of the individual regarding, you know, their ethics and their conflicts of interest. With that, I'll take any questions and leave you any further comments by the attorney.
Brian, in the past, we have on other boards, though, where board members have had questions where maybe they own a business or they have a question about ethics. We have directed them to the Oregon Public Ethics Commission for advice, and they can give that to them in an email or on the phone. I understand what you're saying. You know, it's a personal responsibility, yes. But that is a resource that board members have.
Absolutely.
Right? So we could give folks that information if it isn't already in your packet when you join the board.
Yeah.
And that is a resource.
And they will help you, and they will lay it all out, and they will give you the sites and everything like that. But ultimately, you can't say, well, they told me it was okay.
Understood.
And then so, you know, because they are not the arbiters of your individual ethical dilemmas.
So when Therese notifies me of the next in-grab meeting and I respond, that's public record?
Yeah.
Okay.
She she's going to have it on her public computer, so if we got a public records request...
I'm dependent on entry.
But then again, if like, here's another thing about the communication. If she sends a blanket email, is everyone available for a public meeting on the 24th? Well, that's going to be to a quorum of individuals, but it's administrative. You're not discussing or deliberating actions that are going to come before the board. So that's the big test. You can go out to golf together, but you can't talk about board business out there. Yes, sir.
You mentioned earlier information that could be shared. This is a public meeting, so any information shared here publicly can be shared, but if it's an executive session, that's private information, correct?
Right, right. There's certain circumstances that executive sessions occur, and who can be excluded from them. I'm not aware of this board ever having an executive session.
Yeah.
Kind of skipped over that. Should we have to have an executive session for some odd situation, that, you know, we will deal with that at that time, and I can give advice on to ensure that we're complying fully and faithfully with the requirements.
Recorded and
is it fair to say an executive session for an advisory board would kind of be like sort of a unicorn?
That's what I said.
That we would deal with double secret probation.
Other questions? None. Okay. Well, Brian, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And sorry for keeping everyone late, but the time is 9:25, and having no further business, we are adjourned. Thanks much.
Thank you. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Hold on.
Just a quick announcement. We did hear, unless you follow city social media or our Facebook page, we did get confirmation this week that Mr. Ochoa, who's planning to build a cheese manufacturing and retail facility, closed. He now owns the property, and he's moving forward. So that's a huge win.
Awesome.
That's win.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Great discussion.
You didn't bring me a latte.
I got an email on the thing to reapply.
Uh-huh.
I need to fill out all that stuff.
I'm sorry. I think you need a conversation.
Yeah, I think so, or somebody.
Okay. Typically, my understanding was that there's something renewal, but this is a whole new application. But it's not your renewal. If it's a renewal, you just say, no, I want a renewal.
You can ask all the questions you got to have.
Services.
Hi.
How are you?
If it's a renewal, patient's been.
Okay.
For a long time.
Term expired.
And I live close by.
Okay. Oh, where do you live?
I thought you were leaving.
I don't know. I'm not going to that. Right? No, that's okay. I'm still close by.
Okay.
So, can you move these chairs now or they can stay?